Welcome to Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. Today, the show takes us into the heart of the Polish literary scene by way of the London Book Fair. New research reveals that just 3.5% of British people read Polish books regularly. 70% of readers in the UK have never read a book originally written in Polish, and we're missing out, as there's some exceptional work coming out of the country. Well, here to tell me more about that is Rosie Goldsmith. She's of Eurolit Network. Rosie starts by telling me a little bit more about her project.
The European Literary Network was set up 5 years ago, and it was really because I was a bit depressed about how little professional promotion, if you like, goes on for international literature in this country, because so little is read in translation. Because we have so much wonderful English literature, English language literature from, you know, the Caribbean or India or wherever, and of course, you know, here, UK, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, everywhere. So we don't get a chance to read everything, but I was absolutely convinced, as a linguist myself, I know that we're missing out on so much literature. And I was a foreign affairs reporter at the BBC for 20 years. Everywhere I went, I would read literature from other countries if I could. I'd always take a crime novel in from the original country with me when I was going somewhere, when I was reporting. And it just gave me a completely different insight into the country, the culture, the politics of that country. And literally could not understand why we were reading so little in translation. So I've been chairing something at the British Library called the European Literature Night since 2009, which was a big annual knees up for contemporary writers from Europe in English. And so I created the network in order to support that, really, as a totally independent network. And then a few years ago, I thought, this is just taking up a lot of my time and I'm doing it all for free. We all know about that in literature. That's fine in speech marks. But I thought, well, I'll try to get a grant for it. So the Arts Council, in its great wisdom, has, for the last 3 years, I'm on my third grant now, they've given me a grant to support the European Literature Network, the events we do, the workshops I run for free, it's all free, the website we run. And a year and a half ago, on our website, I started something called Riveting Reviews. I love tabloid language, so I'm the riveter.
Rosie the Riveter.
Look it up. It is actually a very meaningful name, which I'm very proud of. And everything we do is riveting, because I want people to be riveted by this literature in translation. So we started up the reviews, Riveting Reviews, online. And then when I knew that Poland was going to become the market focus for London Book Fair, I was sitting in a steering committee with our wonderful colleagues from British Council. I said, would you like a magazine, an actual print magazine, to support the Polish writers? And they all said, yes, can you do it? And that was a few months ago. And I thought, okay, little did I know, .. But we have a print magazine. It is called The Riveter. Our guest editor is Deborah Levy, the great Deborah Levy, and the front cover, which you can see here, is actually designed by Chris Riddell, the Children's Laureate. So it is the picture of a bison, a Polish bison, a very famous national symbol of Poland.
It is, in fact, edition one of Riveting Polish Writing, which indicates that, of course, there are going to be many more editions.
Oh, Georgina, we hope, we pray for funding particularly, but the next one is pretty much assured. It's going to be contemporary Russian fiction. And that'll be July, August. So we'll do a summer edition.
So you've just come out of a wonderful session with really the woman you describe as Central Europe's Margaret Atwood.
I mean that with all my heart. It came to me in the moment. I thought, I'm listening to probably Poland's greatest female writer, Olga Tokarczuk. And I'm sure Margaret Atwood would be flattered to know that I called Olga Tokarczuk the Margaret Atwood of Poland or Central Europe. She's been writing for quite a long time. She's in her 50s now. She's every single book of hers is a bestseller, and she writes in speech marks difficult subjects. That is, you know, a great sort of hats off, if you like, for Polish literature. They read a lot in Poland. Not enough of it is translated again. But Olga's a pretty great champion for women's writing as well. She's a very outspoken feminist. She's an historian. She writes sci-fi. She writes everything, really.
I was lucky enough to meet with Olga Tokarczuk, one of the most critically acclaimed and commercially successful Polish writers of her generation. Olga trained as a psychologist. I was curious to know how her career developed from there.
I was thinking about writing very early, to be honest. I was a very hungry reader. I always thought that my life will be in a way connected with books, with literature, but I didn't know to what extent and how it will work. But when I was thinking about studying, I thought that psychology will be the best field for me. In the secondary school, I discovered Sigmund Freud, and not especially his clinical works, but the point of view that everything we can read, we can perceive, is possible to be interpreted. So this point of view was very attractive for me. And then everything was during the communistic time. So I imagined psychology as a studying of the world, of the mind, very deep mind of human beings and so on. And I was, of course, disappointed because psychology at the time in Poland was quite narrow and we didn't study Sigmund Freud works, of course. So I think that in the end of my studying, I came back to writing. Just small things, small prose, because I always felt that the short forms of writing are the most attractive and I like them most. And then as a clinical psychologist, I started to work in a mental hospital and with really sick, ill people. But it was very demanding also. And there was such a day when I had my own private clients that I realized that I am much more neurotic than my client. And that was the end of my working as a psychologist. I saved some money and I quit from my work and I decided to write. And it was the beginning of my first novel.
Now, within your writing, I've heard you talk about language being something that is just a tool for you.
I know I'm aware that to say such a thing is quite dangerous in our postmodernistic time, because everything is language, as philosophers used to say. But my experience is different. I don't treat language as a material. I don't work on language. It perhaps sounds crazy, but it's true. I've rather based on the concentration on my mind, and I'm in a way I'm waiting for the language which should come naturally to me when I'm want to use the language to write, to describe something. And it works during my entire career. So is it, I think, quite similar to inspiration, that romantic writers, they were sometimes endlessly waiting for inspiration. But now I still have access to this state of mind. And then at those moments, writing is quite easy. Then you have really access to metaphors, to very sometimes strange connections, and it really works. But it is from time to time, so I'm basing on inspiration still. So I am in a way a romantic writer.
But that inspiration then surely also has to flow through your interpreter. How do you ensure that how we perceive your words in English as interpreted by someone else are actually what you meant?
I don't have influence. This is out of my imagination. I trust my translator. This is only one thing I can do. And of course, I can see that in one languages, my books work better than in another languages. But there is no another way. We have to trust our translators. We should make them as our friends, to let them to come close to us, writers, just to know how we think, how we live, and so on. This is my idea. And the cooperation with translator is very good. Sometimes not on the level of language, but just as a human beings, two human beings from different culture, different languages, and just to touch a little bit ourselves. For instance, I am in a really long friendship with my Serbian translator, and I don't know the language, of course, but I think that she is a person who understands me very good, very deeply. We can really spend a lot of time on discussions about many subjects. So she is, in a way, friend. I also like Antonia Lloyd-Jones, which is from my generation. So we have a quite similar experience, not to the end, because she grew up in Great Britain and I grew up in communistic Poland, but she knows Poland also from the past. And I like her sense of humor, for instance. I like her as a person.
Of course, being of that generation, she, like you, will have gone through this time where feminism, the new wave of feminism, was being forged, and you are known to be a great feminist writer.
It will be the homage to London, because as a student I came here first time. It was the late 80s, I think 87, and that at the time was on the Knightsbridge Road or somewhere. There was Silver Moon, such a bookstore, feministic bookstore. And I discovered this shop once by chance. Nobody told me that such a bookstore can exist. So I spent nearly every while of my free time reading books, because I was too poor to afford to buying those books I really wanted. So I think that reading those books from the old feminist, I would say, in a way changed my mind very deeply, because in Poland we didn't have any access to such a literature. And then I could say that I felt ensured in my own very private perspective. I thought before that I am only one thinking in such a way, but then I discovered that there are many of us, millions of women and men, of course.
How has it been reflected within your writing?
I am eccentric, but what does it mean for me? Eccentric, so I prefer not to be in the center, in the mainstream, but always find a space somewhere outside of the circle, because this is the literary meaning of this word, eccentric, out of circle. And being out of circle, you have access to the very special, sometimes strange and weird points of view. So you can perceive reality from the point of view of animal, let's see. You can see big history from the point of view just a poor woman pregnant in 10 times in her life. And also to be eccentric is to abandon the all mainstream theories about the world, just to look for the strange ideas to describe a world in their own way, in a different words, and so on. So I think that when I'm thinking about every new book, I try first, this is the very beginning of every single book, is to find the right eccentric perspective.
And of course that's got you into trouble. You've been quite controversial in Poland.
I wasn't controversial 2 years ago. I was just broadly read. I became controversial recently.
Why?
Perhaps it's not so closely connected with my books, but rather with my attitudes, with my political engagement, with my words, with my speeches. So for sure I am not, you know, the pupil of this new political power in Poland, but it's good because I'm still eccentric.
So this becoming controversial, as you say, very much linked into the fact that Poland has seen a big shift to the right in the last...
Unfortunately, yes. So I would say that now, during these last 2 years, we lost the baggage of achievements we gained during the last 20 years. So it is really big step back.
And do you think people have forgotten then what happened in the war?
First of all, I think that people feel they are afraid, because we live in such a reality which is full of informations, and there is no patterns how to organize those informations. So reading newspapers, watching television, you have the completely contradictory narrations at the same time. And I think that people would like to come back to the safe past, to the childhood in a way. So childhood for Polish people is the communistic time, when everything was black and white, the traitors and the heroes, you know, so everything was very simple. And I think that the line of this new government is just like our president say, that we should know who was the traitor and who was the hero. And Jarosław Kaczyński said that we should know what is white and what is black, because this is the main pattern we should believe, we should organize our lives.
Well, of course, your latest book, not yet translated into English, The Book of Jacob, looks at this wonderful journey across Central Europe and really does reinterpret the past, shows us perhaps things that we didn't know about what was going on. Tell me a little bit about the book and about Jacob Frank, who it's based on.
Jacob Frank is a very mysterious figure in European history. He was born as a Sephardic Jew in the northern Greece, we should say now. And he grew up in the family which was heretic in the Jewish tradition. And her connection with Poland were very strong. He was in a way designed for a new messiah for the group of his believer, and came to Poland to make a kind of religious revolution. And of course, one part of this revolution, this heresy, was to convert into Catholicism. The result of this conversion was that they were treated as a traitor from his own society. And from the Polish side, from the Catholic side, he was also treated as somebody like the other, the alien, somebody not from our roots. So his position was very hard in a way. But now the scientist, the historian, used to say that the conversion of Frankists were one of the greatest conversion in this part of Europe. So like 15,000 of Jews decided to change, to quit from Judaism and to join to Catholic Church. And what is important for us, Poles, that this quite big group of people established Polish middle class in the end of 18th century. And many, many of the roots of the Polish families are in the Frankist society. So it's a very important part of Polish history, just discovered by this book, because this knowledge wasn't so obvious and it was a little bit taboo. I discovered traveling to preparing myself to write the book. With my husband, we decided to make a big travel around on the traces of Jacob Frank. It means that in the Central Europe, and also we traveled to Balkans and to Turkey. We discovered that the Central Europe at the time was a huge part of many cultures, smaller and bigger, many languages, many beliefs. Some of them are very eccentric, I would say, so taken from the past or based on Cathars, for instance, or Gnostic beliefs still existing in this part of Europe. So the mixture was amazing, really, at the time. And we discovered also, for instance, for me, it was very important because I grew up in communistic Poland, when the main topic of our common identity was the sentence that we always were very homogeneous. It is not true. Poland is a country just in the middle of everything. So if you can imagine the wars or travels and so on, so we are living on the crossroads. So no wonder that I think in our blood are many and other influences from all over the Europe. So that was a kind therapeutical for me, to discover this multilingual Poland, to also discover multicultural Poland. It was such a colorful country, sounding and smelling different than it is now. And of course, Poland was a part of Eastern Central Europe, which is now perceived as a collection of small nations, small countries. But in fact, it is a big organism, very consistent, in fact, itself.
Your book also goes into the acts of colonization by Poland, and that's something that I think many Poles have forgotten and perhaps many other Europeans have never known.
Yeah, but no wonder. That was a time of colonization at the time in the past, and Poland colonized its eastern part, which were inhabited by Ruthenian, we would say, people, now the ancestors of Ukrainians. And that was a very cruel colonization. And Polish people would like perceive themselves as victims of history, and they easily forgetting this part, which British very good remembered. The subject of colonization is a very still alive in, for instance, in British mentality. But in Poland, no, it was in a way forbidden. It wasn't good to say that we colonize anybody. So openly I said that and people didn't like.
The book is written in an extraordinary way. It's narrated by a rabbi, but you've got it to read in the Hebrew way. The pagination is okay. In reverse.
I think that the book is really, as an item, is really beautiful. So there are very long title on the first page, on the cover, and the title is association with Baroque titles, which are very, you know, rich and long and poetic sometimes. And also this pagination of the book from the back, as we would say, is a kind of homage to the Hebrew literature, which supported me very strongly during writing this book. And I would like also to show my readers that as a human being, we can always change the orders, that we are creator of orders. There are no orders which are outside us. So just to put the numbers this way or the other way, it's just our freedom.
Polish writer Olga Tokarczuk talking to me at the London Book Fair last week. Another Polish author breaking convention is Andrzej Sapkowski, who specializes in fantasy and science fiction. Rosie Goldsmith told me more about his work.
Andrzej is a relatively new area of Polish writing, fantasy and sci-fi, but it's been there for a while. I mean, even Olga Tokarczuk writes also with a sci-fi edge, if you like. Sci-fi is doing well everywhere at the moment. I think we've all realised that imaginary worlds are sometimes better than the real world. I'm not going to go into that in any more detail, but no, definitely Andrzej is a major protagonist of that particular genre. And in fact, interestingly, a few years ago when I was doing other interviews here at London Book Fair for the Chinese delegation, I was amazed that there was Chinese sci-fi. I mean, we're just unaware of how much is being written in the rest of the world in other languages.
Andrzej Sapkowski studied economics before turning to writing, and he started his literary career as a science fiction translator.
I worked as a traveling salesman, marketing specialist, something like this, in the state-controlled economy, where the foreign trade was state monopoly. So when the state monopoly ended, so when the new regime replaced old regime, so I lost my work because there was no need for people like me working in small private institutions. So I tried something another, maybe, perhaps we'll have a success or will not. Risky, it was risky, I must confess now, today. But, well, I succeeded.
So is there a big appetite for science fiction in Poland?
Yes, it always was. As far as I remember, being a child, science fiction was very popular. Of course, fantasy came later with Tolkien, who was translated into Polish in early 60s. And then started a boom for fantasy as well.
Your best known work is The Witcher. That's a series. Tell me about that.
Yes, it's a series. It's a person, let's say, because The Witcher is a hero of the series. So, of course, it is mine. I have all the rights to this name and to this character. My invention. I'm very proud of it.
You also have a role-playing computer game based on The Witcher.
Yes, I don't know too much about this because I did not participate in the making of the game, and I never played it because, you know, games like this are far beyond my sphere of interest.
So you
far
say,
beyond.
But you're a man who's created these wonderful, intricate universes based on Slavic mythology.
Oh, more or less, let's say, more or less. Do not exaggerate with the Slavic mythology or something like this. It's not true.
Where will your work take you next? Will you stick with the same genre?
Well, generally, I must answer that about steamships. You know why? Because they ask American writer Tim Powers, what will be your next book about? And he said, steamships. Why steamships? Because competition steals the ideas. So I tell everybody, steamships. Let them steal ships, steamships. But if you ask what my future book will be about steamships.
Andrzej, I'm not going to steal your idea. Thank you so much. Andrzej Sapkowski, author of The Witcher series, amongst many other works. All our interviews for the show this week have come from the London Book Fair. The focus was on Polish literature, which I was happy to discover is thriving. Well, we're giving our final word to Rosie Goldsmith of EuroLit Network, who works to ensure European literature remains at the forefront.
We do everything humanly possible, and there are only two of us running it. I'm the editor of the website, and I have a Polish colleague, happens to be Polish, who posts everything. We design everything, we collate all the material, and basically what we do with the network, which anybody is welcome to participate and to post any of their events, any of their workshops, anything to do with European literature in English in the UK or from the rest of the world, festivals, events, whatever, sample translations. We're trying to promote it. The whole idea of the website is to promote this literature, not to create it necessarily. That's for other people to do, translators, publishers and so on, but to use the website as a kind of calling card for writers.
You've been listening to a special edition of Meet the Writers, recorded at London Book Fair last week. Thanks to my guests Olga Tokarczuk, Rosie Goldsmith and Andrzej Sapowski, to producer Claire Urban and researcher Paige Reynolds. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.